What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, he's over there in the other box, Andy Esimakis. How you doing, buddy?
Did you ever see, like, read a game description that totally makes you fall in love with games all over again?
Like games in general?
Like, you read about a game, you watch, you see some, you know, some footage, look at some screenies, and you're like, this is why I fucking play video games.
This is why games are on this planet.
This is one of those games, I feel. Because when I looked at this thing and I saw it in motion and I read what it was about, what it was trying to accomplish, I was like, first I had to calm the erection, like, stop boning. Right. And I was like, holy shit, this is why games are just... the best thing, and I love them, and I will never not love them, because games like this, today's guest
joining us this week is the whole team, Black Salt Games. I was prepared to have Joel here. I don't know which one is Joel. Raise your hand if you're Joel.
I was gonna guess.
Hello Joel. All right, so you are on my right. So right now in the center, who do we have in the center here?
Alex.
Yeah. Joel, Alex, and
Mikey.
All right. Well, that's not. I could remember things. I'm not gonna remember any of this. None of it. Black Salt Games, the developers of Dredge, a cosmic horror fishing game.
Come on now. Could you not?
I could not.
Like, how hard did I fall in love with this game when I first saw it? Like, incredibly.
Welcome to the show. We appreciate you joining us on this evening. Where are you guys based out of?
So we're in New Zealand, quite a long way away.
Okay. So is it like first thing in the morning right now?
Happy Friday, guys.
No, it's lunchtime here. We just had lunch.
Whoa, it's like more than a day. That's crazy.
Yeah, but it's tomorrow as well. So it's Friday.
Yeah.
Wow, Friday, as the kids say. All the kids say that. I don't know if you know that. For those of you that are new here to the Dual Screens Podcast, this is the internet's number one indie developer interview podcast that nobody has heard of, probably. The show posts each and every week for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean. And we actually do have some good news, Andy.
Good news.
Yes. Good news all around for both Dual Screens podcasts, which is the Dual Screens Podcast and Indies Nuts Podcast. We have had our best month ever. Total across the board, as far as downloads go,
something's working. We're doing something right.
The best month we have ever had. So thank you guys so much for all of your support. Remember, if there is a rating system on your podcast app, please consider rating the show. It helps tremendously. I just found out that now Spotify is doing ratings. All you have to, even if you don't listen to the show on Spotify, download an episode, play like 8 seconds of one, and then you could rate it. So get on there, give us your rating. It helps the algorithm, lets people know about that the show exists. The whole reason why we do this is to get developers of indie games that we love out there to show their faces, to make a connection with the people who love their games. So it would help us out tremendously if you are out there reviewing the show. Also, be sure to stop by patreon.com/dualscreens, just like our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler. We cannot continue to grow and go to PAX East, which we're going to next week, 1 week from yesterday, Andy. Oh, we'll be in Boston rubbing our socked feet together.
I can't wait.
It's gonna be real weird. It's gonna be real weird.
Sleeping, you know,
yeah,
ass to face or whatever configuration we do in that bed.
All I know is that I'm bringing my earplugs because the demon that sleeps in your throat
speaking of demons
at night is just not gonna cut it. Yes, Andy, let's get into the show proper.
Oh my God.
We have three gentlemen's sitting so patiently.
They are
waiting for our hard-hitting questions, and you are the hardest hitter of questions.
Correct.
Hit us with our ceremonial and most incredible.
I just need to know.
Lead off question.
What's being smoked, ingested, and where can I get it?
Is it legal in New Zealand? Is that where we're?
Is it a New Zealand exclusive? Because
it's not legal in New Zealand.
You're licking kiwis to get the inspiration for this incredible. Again, but seriously, where does an idea like this even begin to come from out of your twisted brains?
It's really hard to pinpoint it. I feel like some days the idea, I remember the idea coming to me like fully formed, and in other days I remember it coming sort of more piecemeal. But it's one of those things, you know, cosmic horror fishing. It's something that just feels right together. You know, when we describe the game a cosmic horror fishing game, people are surprised, but then they immediately say, oh yeah, that makes sense. Why hasn't that been done before?
Yeah, we get a lot of why hasn't that been done before.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those sort of like, oh, tell us about your game. It's a cosmic horror fishing RPG. Mic drop. And then it's just like everyone just gets excited about that. You don't even need to show any of the game, it feels like, half the time. It's just that idea in itself is just really exciting.
There's something inherently terrifying about the ocean at night that it just makes sense. It you're alone, it's spoopy, and now you have just some sort of spirit Cthulhu craziness happening.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, because you don't really need to add a lot on top of the ocean to make it freaky, right? Like when we prototyped this game years ago now, you know, that we didn't have time, we spent 2 weeks on it, we you know, chucked a monster in there, but it was scary enough without that. Just some fog and the darkness and a really pitiful lantern on your boat was enough to really create an atmosphere, and the you know, players' imaginations is what really sells the game, I think.
And
that's like the cornerstone of what makes good cosmic horror, is you don't know what it is that's after you, and you can't really describe it. Even when you do finally get to see what it is that's chasing you in the darkness, it's just this thing that your brain can't even begin to comprehend that it exists somehow in reality.
Yeah, and you don't need to describe it at all, because people fill in those blanks. And some of the ways we sort of approach the storytelling in the game is to just hold as much back as we could, not tell people, not show people, because, you know, the unknown is creepy.
Yeah. So yeah, this is just going to be a simple question. It's a yes or no. Is there a moment when you're fishing in this game called Dredge where the fisherman says, "I am the lure"?
Steven.
Yes.
No.
Do we understand the reference?
I do not.
I'm Judge
Dredd. Mr. Judge Dredd. Yes, you got it.
Judge
Dredd.
I am the lure. I am the lure.
Oh, wait. Can
get
we
it?
Just
lure?
Say it?
I am the lure. Yeah. Do you get it? Because it's a fishing lure.
Now, wait.
Fucking got him. Yes.
We've seen so many like fish puns and ocean puns, and but no like Judge Dredd puns yet.
Now wait a minute. Now
it's a dual screens first. You hear it?
Yeah. How long did that take you?
Literally, since I introduced you, I was thinking about it. So you're lucky I was able to follow the bouncing ball for 8 minutes and 26 seconds. So
now,
cheers to you.
Is that guy's name Judge Dredge? Is that what the...
He is the lure.
He is the lure. Let's do a little bit of like roll call. What are all your respective roles in Black Sword?
Oh yeah, this is an interview
where do you,
about
where
the...
do you, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I guess we'll start with me. I'm Joel. I'm the programmer and also the writer. I've not written for any games before, but you know, with indie teams, we just sort of pick up various responsibilities as we go. But yeah, primarily programmer.
I'm the lead artist, so I'm responsible for most of the, well, all the 2D art and a lot of the 3D as well, and pretty much a bit of everything.
Yeah, and I'm Mikey, and I'm a 3D artist and animator on this project.
Okay, awesome.
Did you leave your Black Salt Games shirt at home today, Alec, with your rocking?
That's what I said just before we started. I was like, oh, yeah, I've got a Lord of the Rings one. I've got like Frodo's big.
It's like the most New Zealand thing. It was shot here, so I'm going to wear this shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad backup choice.
For some reason, like, it fits perfectly with the whole ambiance of Dredge, though.
Yeah.
Like, the spooky
it does,
Hobbit
yeah.
face. Why does he look so, like, pensively spooky? Like, it's weird.
He always looks like that.
It's just the strain. He looks like he does. He's really the reluctant adventurer of the story, but I digress. Andy.
So let's get into what is the sort of core gameplay loop in Dredge. I know it's, you know, there's fishing and there's horror. How do you blend those two? How does the gameplay all sort of come together to create, to merge these two distinctive kind of play styles and genres?
Well, the core gameplay loop is catch fish, sell fish, upgrade your boat. And I think the way that we bring horror into that is by putting players in situations where they sort of push their luck and they stay out beyond evening into night. So you might be sort of forgiven for thinking that money is your like primary resource in that loop, but it's actually time. So time doesn't pass if you're not moving in our day-night cycle. But if you are sailing around and if you're catching fish, the clock will tick past. And if you, you know, spend too long catching a particular fish or you've gone out a bit too far, you'll find yourself out on the waters at night, which is where spooky things happen. So yeah, time is really your primary resource in that loop. And that's where the horror aspects of the atmosphere come in.
Do you drive the player to spend some time out there on purpose so that they can get kind of pulled into that narrative?
Yeah, deliberately we do. I mean, we sort of place some fish around in places that we think are a little bit too far for players to reach initially. We also, within the first sort of half an hour, we sort of say, oh, why don't you go out and catch this fish that only appears at night? And players will do that. Sometimes they'll just sneak out of the bay, catch the fish and come back. And sometimes they'll actually go and explore further, and that's a mistake. But players can sort of play it the way they want. Like a lot of the nighttime stuff is optional. You can avoid the horror elements if you choose to. So you can sort of control your own game difficulty in that way.
That makes for a really cool like interactive experience with like streamers and like something like that, where you all say, okay, this is it. You all want it to happen, so we're going out at night. Let's see what happens, and you kind of just challenge yourself a little bit.
We've definitely seen a lot of that. People, you know, playing it safe, and then chat is saying like, go out at night, go on.
Cowards.
And then sometimes they'll go out and then scare themselves silly, and then realize, oh, there was nothing out that night. And like, oh, maybe it's not so bad. Then they'll go out another night, and it's like, oh, that's why things are bad.
Yeah, we've seen people scared of their own shadow in the game, which is, I mean, that's top tier success right there.
Could you spend the entire night on the water fishing? Does it get more dangerous as the longer you play on the water?
Yeah, it does. And especially if you're in particular areas or, you know, particularly deep water, you know, different things could be around. I'm trying not to spoil too much, of course.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a bit of a sanity sort of mechanic that we've kind of got in the game. So the longer that you're out next to or in spooky areas or away from sources of light, then the rate that bad things might start happening to you just increases.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, and there are aspects of the game as well that only reveal themselves when you're at the other end of the sanity spectrum. But we keep that for players to discover if they want to. Again, it's not forced. Because like we're not massive horror gamers ourselves. We just really love the like atmosphere that a lot of these games have. Without wanting all the jump scares and stuff. So yeah, giving players that atmosphere while keeping things flexible for them was really important to us.
That's so dope.
What kind of actions can the players take during these horror moments? Is it about escaping, or is there actual, I don't want to say combat, but like, is there a conflict mechanic for the spooky parts?
Sort of. It's definitely more about like outsmarting and outmaneuvering than outgunning. Okay. Sure. Because yeah, again, part of cosmic horror is, you know, this thing that is sort of insurmountable, unknowable. You can't just shoot it with a gun kind of thing. So yeah, there's ways that players can deal with things, but you know, not from day one right off the bat. You know, there are things that you should be scared of in this game. Mm.
And as you upgrade your boat, do the monsters get more intense the longer you play and go on to make things more difficult?
More challenging? The as you sort of upgrade your bow and you naturally explore further afield, you will encounter sort of more and more dangerous monsters. You can actually head to the first or the final area as soon as you start the game. It's a little bit like Breath of the Wild and how
you can do
the divine beasts in any order you choose, but we sort of guide you through a recommended path. But we're really interested to see the order that people actually do choose, because I think there's some sort of interesting speed running strategies and stuff in there as well.
So why are you doing this? Like, what is your prime motivation, the character, to want to be on the water at night and potentially hunt these dangerous creatures?
I think that the initial reason you're doing this is so you go to join this new town to become their fisherman, and on your way there you crash, and they give you a replacement boat, which comes with an accompanying debt. Sort of Tom Nook style Animal Crossing. So you've got to start paying off that debt in the first few days of the game, by going out and catching fish and selling them. But as you sort of move past that debt, you will start to be sort of caught up in the underlying story, and get driven through the game from that point on. The reason that you are doing what you are doing becomes apparent as the story progresses, is what I'll say.
There are some pretty gross looking fish that this dude puts on and sells on his table. Now, is that like part of the mechanics where you'll catch a fish, but you spend too long out there and it starts to rot on your boat or something? Or is that literally what he caught and sold?
We do have like a freshness kind of mechanic where your fish will rot. But you're probably talking about our aberrations, which are the aberrant fish, as the name suggests. They're all kind of mutant and weird, warped by some kind of like unknowable power of the deep. And it was a lot of fun.
And people spend money on that. They buy this.
there's one person in particular, the fishmonger. He's a weird kind of guy. He likes seeing these weird things. He thinks he's seen it all, but he's interested in, he'll pay you more for the weirder fish you bring him.
Yeah.
So they're actually quite valuable.
I would pay top dollar for like a fishy eldritch horror, let me tell you. Why not?
Andy, you don't pay top dollar for anything.
I don't.
You haggle and chip away and get the lowest possible price without there being physical conflict. That is your strategy.
Accurate.
I love the animation in these scenes, like dragging the octopus across the table there, like there's something very unique yet familiar about it. It almost reminds me of those late 90s Cartoon Network cartoons. This kind of has a Courage the Cowardly Dog little feel to it to me.
Telling you, it has this cutesy like layer on top, but then like it's hiding a horror underneath.
It's hiding the spookies.
Actually a really interesting like juxtaposition, because we sort of trick people into thinking it's like a cozy fishing game. Mm-hmm. But pretty quickly you see that it's not that, right?
Half of it, some of it is.
Yeah,
cozy
like
bits.
During the daytime, it's nice and pretty. But there's always this like sinister atmosphere around. And I think you were saying that like the prototype that we did and spent 2 weeks on was what sort of drove that simplistic art style.
Yeah, our prototype had like really low poly art because we just needed to get it done quick, because we prototyped very quickly. And it turned out that the juxtaposition of like the really simple cutesy art and the spooky stuff was kind of like worked really well, surprisingly. So we kind of kept it.
Those sirens are on one of our end. I think that's Andy.
That's not me.
Just making sure in case someone's driving. No, don't worry. The cops are not pulling you over right now. Don't worry.
St. Patty's Day, so someone's probably causing some trouble out this day.
Oh boy. My kids made a leprechaun trap. So that's going to be fun.
How does that work?
Yeah.
I do not know.
Seriously, right?
They filled it with candy and money. Okay. So I guess we'll see.
Doesn't the leprechaun have money already?
Let's not question the logic. It's American money.
It's a shamrock shake with a box and a stick and a rope.
It is literally a box with a hole in it. And my daughter put one of her Barbie ladders, because for some reason my children think leprechauns are about 6 inches tall. And I feel like it's creepier thinking that it's that way. There's some sort of eldritch horror that they're thinking. But they set up one of their cameras, one of their like baby cameras, and plugged it in and to capture this thing. They don't realize that camera does not record. It's just for live feed, but you know, whatever. We'll figure something out.
Speaking of creepy things, what are some of the inspirations on some of the monster designs, Alex? Throw that to you, since you're the artist guy, creating all these nightmarish creatures, as it were.
Well, actually, I guess it's just kind of like stream of consciousness when it gets down to it, when I'm making the art, but also there's a lot of input from these guys about like ideas of what to make them look like. But it's also, there's a lot of inspiration from real life, because the ocean gets freaky and gets weirder the deeper the fish are. And it's actually kind of hard to compete sometimes with how weird the real life fish are.
Mm. Yeah, there's some freaky ass shit down there.
Is it hard? Yeah. Is it difficult to avoid destroying tentacles on everything?
Oh, I had to deal with that quite a bit. I kept putting tentacles in everything anyway. I was like, no, because then I also have to like get and animate it. And then it's like, that's far too much effort to kind of go through to add a whole bunch of tentacles onto everything that we're doing. And then to actually get them to run on like the switch when we're already kind of limited by how many animations or rigs and joints and stuff like that to keep things optimized to run on that. So it's like, oh, I guess we've got to get rid of some tentacles then.
And I did try my best to just, fall back to, you know, the tropes that you're used to, like tentacles,
three heads,
tentacles, three teeth heads.
What a Although fun problem to have.
It's always fun to just put human teeth on fish, though. That works.
My god,
putting human things onto like fish and stuff like that, that's always creepy.
They do that in Pokemon, like they make Pokemon there's a Pokemon called Bruxish. And it's got human lips and human teeth, and it's fucking gross.
Doesn't an actual fish have human looking teeth?
Yeah, there's one.
There's that one.
There is
one.
Oh yeah, there is that one. Yeah.
Is that the it's like something fish. The blobfish? No, the I forget.
It's got like a human looking nose.
Yeah, it's the one that's got like that big nose. Yeah. That was probably the missing link. We should probably figure that out. That could be us before we got on land and started walking around. Just kind of like stuck. You never know, man. We used to. I heard that we get the hiccups because it's an old ancestral calling back to when we had gills and couldn't breathe out of the water. And I heard that if you tell yourself in your head, I'm not a fish, I am a human, I breathe air, your hiccups will go away. And I did it, and it fucking worked. So, you know, make fun of the fish with the human nose, but, you know, there's something there. There's something to be said.
I'm looking forward to getting hiccups now to try that
just
out.
I'm telling you, man, it's weird.
If that works, that'll change my whole perspective of the world.
I'm telling you, man, it is a strange, strange thing. So you upgrade your boat. That's part of the the carrot at the end of the stick, as it were. Are you also upgrading your fishing equipment, or like is that part and parcel with the boat? Is that a separate mechanic?
It all sort of feeds into itself from this core, like we have this spatial inventory system. So you sort of play inventory Tetris. You start out with this sort of vaguely boat shaped grid, and you've got a fishing rod and an engine in there. And as you catch fish, they slot into your inventory and they have different shapes. So like mackerel are like two cells and they're straight, and then cod is three cells, but it's like an L shape. So you're sort of tessellating your fish in, trying to like maximize your profits for the day. And then you get back and you might buy another rod, which will allow you to catch fish faster, but it takes up space in that inventory. Or you might buy an engine, which allows you to get places faster before the sun sets. But again, it takes up space in your inventory. And you can eventually upgrade your boat to make the inventory bigger, fit more engines, fit more rods and stuff. So it all sort of, yeah, ties into your inventory system.
Yeah, like there are different types of fish that require different types of rods. So we've got how many different
types? 7 or 8 different types.
Yeah, so there's like, yeah, those sort of like rods types, and then they all catch different fish, which is part of that whole, oh, okay, I've caught pretty much most of the fish here, but to get the bigger ones, you need to get a different rod which catches that particular fish. And eventually you'll find yourself with, all right, I can fit 2 of these rods on my boat, but I can't catch this particular type of fish anymore. So then you end up trying to juggle what sort of equipment you kind of put on if you're going up to a different area, because all those different biomes, they'll have different types of fish, and you'll go, oh, I need to have this particular rod for this particular area, and then change up your entire equipment on your boat just so you can catch the fish there in that particular zone.
So we turned your inventory into also your equipment loadout. But it's also your health bar, because if you get attacked by something, or if you like clumsily drive into a rock and take damage, you will lose a cell in that inventory. Sort of at random, a spot will get damaged and you can't place things into that spot anymore. If that damage happened to hit an engine, that engine's knocked out and suddenly you're going a lot slower. Or it's knocked out a rod, or it's knocked out your lights at night, which is pretty inconvenient.
Nope.
It can also destroy fish. It can destroy quest items, so you can sort of like fail quests based on clumsy driving, basically.
I'm fucked completely.
So
a good driver.
Is there like a side quest, or like there's like a RPG element to that, to like getting side quests from like town people? Is there that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a main quest and there's side quests, and they all sort of, a lot of them have sort of different resolutions. So I said the word fail is I think probably the wrong word, but you can complete quests in less than ideal ways.
Sure.
Little bit like how I guess Dark Souls always has like resolutions to quests, which are not necessarily what you expect them to be. Yeah, we tried to keep things, I guess, fresh and unpredictable, I think, in that sense.
Yeah, it's that whole idea of like having kind of like actual like action or repercussions to your kind of actions that you take. So if you are just going to be like, I'm going to go out at night, it doesn't really matter. And then you're carrying something precious on board, trying to ferry it from one island to the next, and then you just bump into something, you might lose that thing. And then so hopefully they'll teach that player, okay, I can't underestimate things at night and everything like that.
There's a little risk reward there.
Yeah.
What does a game over look like? Like, how can you like die? Can you even like die in this game? Or if the boat
you can take too much damage. Mm-hmm. And as you upgrade your boat, your sort of max health, you know, the number of hits you can take goes up. But also as you sort of reach the harder areas in the game, things will also hit you much harder too. But yeah, there is a game over state, but it's not like a roguelike. You just sort of load back to your previous
website. Yeah, thank you for that.
it didn't really make sense for it to be like a primarily story-based game, but also a roguelike. That just didn't sit well with us. So it's a normal game with save slots. Yeah,
he is the lure. I will think about that forever.
No, I hate you now. I can never watch that film without thinking about.
Oh, because you watch the film often?
You know what I do?
Every once in a while you throw Judge Dredd on?
Yeah.
Circa 1996, yeah, 7, course, whatever that was? Not?
I watch it after I watch Total Recall.
Right.
Yeah. I've seen both. There's the reboot and then there's the old Judge Dredd, right? Yeah, I've seen them both.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah.
You're missing out.
It is
some quality
classic cheese.
It's all good in different ways.
One of Rob Schneider's most iconic roles.
That is true. That was a Rob Schneider flick. That is.
I definitely forgot about that part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Shoulder pads. Shoulder pads are big in that dystopia. Huh. So you said you go island to island. Are there like home bases on these various islands, or is it like just an island to explore?
Yeah, there's a number of different sort of spots of civilization or remnant civilization that you might find. And there's sort of 5 distinct areas that are all pretty different from each other. And yeah, there's inhabitants in most of these places, so you'll meet different characters which will have more side quests for you, maybe some answers to some questions, maybe some more questions for you. Yeah, it's a full, I think I describe it as like a small open world.
Yeah.
But there's still quite a lot to do in it. Like we've packed something into pretty much every island that you can find.
A smoping world, Andy.
Yeah. This is going to be geared directly towards Joel, because you mentioned before how you never really wrote for a game before. So what was that process like as a first timer, like going through, you know, the actual writing of the game? Did you find it difficult or challenging more than you, like the work itself? Like how did you find it, the whole process?
It was definitely challenging. I found I had to get myself into this like separate space, because normally I'm sort of thinking in terms of like logic and lines of code and stuff, but I had to get into this like very sort of emotional state, because a lot of these characters have pretty intense feelings for this horribly depressing, awful world that they live in.
Do you have like a playlist?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, there's a lot of like post rock and stuff in there.
Good.
Yeah, so I would basically, we would plan out the sort of the next area. We would sort of do it chunk by chunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would take probably a week or so just writing the script. We sort of decided on what the quests in the area might be and the characters. And I would write the script and the dialogue for what these characters would say and how they would feel. But being the programmer as well allowed me to sort of think about all of the different like edge cases that these characters might have to talk about. So it's getting kind of technical, but like when you go to pick something up from a quest giver, because we have an inventory system that is, you know, spatial, if your inventory is full and you can't take the quest item, they have to have like a line of text that's, oh, you're full, better come back when you got space in your inventory. And sort of all of these edge cases in the narrative that, you know, a lot of players wouldn't think about. But, you know, we were able to sort of craft around that. Yeah.
Need so much for our story-like game at the very start of things.
Yeah, we originally planned it to have very minimal story and sort of, I guess, taking the Hollow Knight approach of just telling things through, you know, like rocks that you would touch and then, you know, maybe item descriptions and stuff. But players wanted to know more about the world. And we tried to keep the dialogue really light. We never wanted players to have to read paragraphs of text to interrupt their exploration. So we kept it to like 5 lines at a time at the most, unless you wanted to ask for more questions. So we keep it light.
Unless overall. You want to really read into it, there's a lot of optional, you know, dialogue and extra stuff you can really get into.
Yeah, like all the kind of things you can find in the world, like there's messages in a bottle, and then that's where we've literally got like, all right, here's a long expose of just more backstory. And then for the people that go out and find those things, they figure out more about the kind of story behind the story that we're trying to tell the player as well. So for those that explore things, there's so much more to find than what we kind of present to the players just through the main quests.
I think that's what I'm looking forward to the most, like a YouTube video post-launch where someone's like speculating on how something might have gone down. Interested.
If we get that, then we've made it. I want that expose video.
Steve, let's plan an 8-hour video essay about this game post launch.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Capture your gameplay. Actually, screw it. You guys, send me some B-roll. Send me 8 hours of B-roll, please. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll help. I'm sure you got it. I'm sure you got plenty.
8 hours. We've got it. We've got like an hour.
Yeah. We've got quite a few because I think I've recorded every time I've played through it. So there's usually a bunch of that stuff in there. There's plenty of footage around there, I think, now anyway.
What do you want the main takeaway to be from players when they, after a nice little session with Dredge, when they put the controller down? What should be happening inside? How should they feel?
I guess for me at least, that they feel rewarded for the way that they've chosen to play the game, because I think like we mentioned, you can play it like a cozy fishing game and then just go around trying to play Pokemon and just catch all the different types of fish in the game, and then maybe finish off that main storyline of the game. But other people, they might be just trying to figure out, all right, I just want to know more about the story. I'm just going to just focus on the main storyline and then just play with all of that sort of stuff. And then other people might be like, I really want to investigate what's going on really deep into the lore of this game. And then so those people can kind of get the kind of feelings and experiences that they want from the game, then I'd be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you come away like just satisfied enough, but you're like, you still have those looming questions that maybe you think about for a little while, or maybe you want to maybe you'd want to dive back in and read like extra optional stuff to try and find out what's going on. That's what my goal.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think I want players to feel like they, you know, were in a world for however long they played the game for, and like feeling part of this spooky atmosphere that we've tried to create.
All right. Andy, I think it's time that we segue into our rapid fire segment of the show where we get to know you. Point out you. Black Salt Games, this is going to be a rapid fire section where you're going to tell us the answers as quickly as you can. I'm going to freeze my question since there's three of you and I don't want to get like three, you know, separate answers all the time because then it's not so rapid. So here's going to be my first question. Which one of you is most likely to be arrested?
This Mikey.
Trying to be polite about it.
Yeah. All right.
Can I just say, Mikey, you have a very like Tim Curry quality of your face. Like I'm looking at you, I'm like, I just see Tim Curry. Like
I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
No, it's a great thing.
It's a great thing. You could play a clown or
a butler in Clue or
Mater D or
whatever
Dr. Frankenweenie or whatever the hell that character's name is.
Joel, if you could condemn one fate to Alex, would it be for him to have permanent wet socks or permanent wet hair?
I have holes in a lot of my shoes, so I have wet socks whenever it rains, and that's awful. So I think wet hair. He doesn't deserve wet socks.
Yeah, thank you. Jeez.
Which one of you is most likely able to crush a beer can on their head?
Mikey.
Probably also Mikey.
You've done that, right?
Maybe not this beer can, but other random cans. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's a different conversation.
I kind of feel like I know the answer. It's trending a certain way.
We're trending.
But fuck it. Who among the three of you would be a cult leader? And the other two would follow very quickly and be a part of the cult.
This is actually pretty interesting because I think we'd all make pretty good cults. It'd all do different things, but I think, I'd really like to see an Alex cult. I reckon that'd be something awesome.
Be a pretty chill cult.
They would have cool t-shirts.
Yeah, they'd have really cool t-shirts. Yeah. The merch would be off the,
chain.
Yeah.
Totally. All right, so Andy and I are dredging out into the cold black sea. We're fishing. Which one of you is the most hideous fish in the ocean?
Hideous fish. What makes a hideous fish? They're all beautiful.
I don't know. You designed them.
I think I'd make a good creepy fish.
Yeah,
Mikey.
Yeah, it's me again.
He's got
the human teeth already. You do have human teeth. You're halfway
there. One of us has the human teeth.
How many tentacles do you have, Mikey?
Don't answer that. No, the algorithm will find a whole other section of people to listen to this.
Optimization.
Oh, don't give me some of the algorithm stuff because I'm the one that usually has to search for creepy looking fish, and I think every now and then you just get like the whole. Searching tentacle monsters, you get bad results from Google Images.
No, we don't like that.
Alex, if Joel and Mikey were a wrestling team, what would their name be?
What would their tag team name be?
Their
tag team.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Do you watch wrestling?
No.
Great. Even better.
Even better. Yeah.
Neither does Handy.
I don't know what these kind of things usually are. I honestly don't know.
Doesn't matter. What would you call this duo?
The duo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just naming after the company. You can be the Salty Boys.
There we go.
Oh, I like that.
The Salty Boys. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's good.
That works.
The Salty Boys. Yeah. That's why they're so angry. It's why they're wrestling. They're just forever salty.
Perfect.
The world's famous YouTuber, Mr. Beast, has come into your office right now. He's right behind you. He walks in. And he asks you, I have $10 million in my hands right here, but only one of you can have it. Which do you guys choose to have the $10 million?
Take it and I run.
Yeah, I was like, can we fight for it?
Who is fastest?
Yeah, that's not me.
It's probably Mike who's fastest.
Nah. So there's no, you have it. Say, like, none
you
of
take
that.
It, Alex, and then we just bug Alex to get it off him afterwards.
Yeah, ultimately, that's the boring
who's
answer.
Who's most likely going to cave and give it to everyone else afterwards?
I would.
Who among the three of you would start a bar fight first?
Start a bar fight?
A bar fight. Like, who's
at me again, and I just,
who's the troublemaker?
No,
I feel like we know that
would
answer.
I start it? No, I probably wouldn't know. Start
yeah,
it.
He's
start things. No. I'm getting low.
I feel he'll jump in first.
Things. Yeah. You're shit's going down? Great. Yeah. I'm excited.
He's waiting for the fight to start.
Hold my beer. Yeah. Just making.
It's like the fight goes down, and I'll be the one yelling out, "Buff!" Throwing shit.
Let's see.
I'm feeling judged.
That's good. That's what we want you guys to feel.
Yeah.
That's what we want you guys to feel.
We're doing it right.
You're feeling judged. I'm the one that seems to be like, man, this guy's this is all going to be paid off with this guy that's going to get arrested for bar fights and looks like I might be very shitty wrestles half the time.
And then just, you know, poor little wethead Alex in the corner.
Yeah. Well, I got dry socks.
All right, I think I got one here. You've got three superpowers. You have flight, invisibility, and super speed. Who has what power?
Give me invisibility.
I'll take flight.
All right. If I got super speed, can I at least cross oceans?
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, that wasn't so bad.
That wasn't too bad at all.
No, that was really good. High fives all around.
Just take a little bit longer, and I might get sore legs.
Easy.
If the three of you were to compete in a rap battle, who would win?
A rap battle.
A rap battle.
Not me. So I'll say that one of you guys. Are you good at rapping?
No.
I'll talk the fastest, but that doesn't make me good at rapping.
Yeah, well, it's halfway.
Yeah.
I think yours would be the funniest.
Yeah.
We're learning quite a bit here, Andy.
We are. It's fascinating.
We're learning quite a bit.
What you do with that information is up to you.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry. We have plans for all the information.
It's a special document that we keep.
It is. There's a, it's a special
like
hard drive.
Spreadsheet. Yeah.
Note to self. Yeah. No, we don't write any of this stuff down. I'm running out of three-way questions here, Andy. I might have to go to our classics.
Oh, I got one more that I think they can each answer individually, I'm kind of curious.
Okay.
What they would say. I can go. I'm good.
Yeah,
good.
Go.
Okay.
Yeah, why not?
We'll start with Joel, Alex, and then Mikey, just so no one's like calling out random talking over.
Yeah, we want to keep things organized here on this podcast in case you guys can't tell.
Yeah, of course. We're all about the organization here. run a tight ship.
There's a format here.
Yeah. if you were given the rights to any gaming franchise to make your own game, let's say like you can make your very own Mega Man game, what franchise would you pick?
I feel like I know yours.
What do you think mine is?
It's just going to be Jack and
It was probably going to be Jack and Daxter.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Why have they not remastered that? Like, honestly, what are they doing?
The world needs a new Jack and Daxter. It's sorely missed.
What if I could just have any IP?
Whatever you want, yeah.
Do a thing with it.
Like, here, Alex, make us a new so-and-so.
It's probably Dishonored. I don't know. Dishonored.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd probably put a Dark Puss in Pokemon. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Especially compared to all the amount of times you just see like, oh, here's this latest version of Pokemon, and look at it, I'm like, oh, you've made things worse.
Well, aren't they doing that with, was it Pal World? Their Pokemon with guns?
Yes. That looks really good, though.
Of everything, right? Isn't it like every genre?
It looks so good.
Wild.
There are Pokemon that are forced to make weapons, like guns in like a factory. Mm-hmm. And it's just, man, it's weird.
It's good.
But somehow it doesn't feel like a dark take. It feels like a happy take.
Yeah, it's like no. They like this. This is what they do. Like they're just fun loving gun toting adventurers.
It's really not that different from actual Pokemon.
No, it isn't.
I could just imagine Mikey's like evolution designs. Here you go. Here's the new Pikachu. Why does it have so many tentacles? All have tentacles.
DeviantArt would have a field day.
Idea, like cosmic horror Pokemon. That actually sounds pretty epic.
Oh,
legal reason.
Yeah. All right. It is now time for the final question, the very last question. That's what final means. It is the hardest question that you'll ever be asked in your entire lives, and whether you get it right or wrong, we'll see. But no pressure either way. Okay? You have to come to a consensus.
Oh, you're doing it that way?
I'm doing it that way.
Okay.
Well, you must come to a consensus.
Yeah. They'll have to vote.
Yes. Two votes gets it. The question is, Andy or Steve?
Steve, do you have a dog?
No.
Andy, do you have a dog?
Yes, I do.
I don't think it's my vote.
If it helps, my dog's
like,
my dog's,
you know what? Yeah, no, because I could see two different outcomes for like that whole same sort of idea. It's like, yeah, he's got a dog. Let's keep him around for that. And also, he's got a dog. Let's get him.
Yeah, because that happens.
I like dogs. So I'd say Andy.
All right.
Sorry, Steve.
That's it. That's okay. Well,
all right. I'll give my dog.
Although, like, my motives for picking Andy is probably a lot different than probably Joel's ones for it. But.
I like this. I get to stay in the middle and not
you didn't have to say anything. I have two children and four cats, so that counts for something, I guess. It counts for another W for Andy.
I'm sure.
So I'm going to vote for Steve then.
There you go. See? Suck it, Andy. I got to vote. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening and watching. If you want to follow us on social media, we're at @Duel_Screens. I'm at @Batchild27. Andy is at @PantsGuy. You could also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/group/DSPodcasts. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/DuelScreensTV. You could follow us on Twitch, where we do Indies Nuts podcast every single Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, which is in about 35 seconds.
Correct.
on twitch.tv/DuelScreensStreams. Gentlemen, where could everybody find Black Salt Games and, of course, Dredge?
So Black Salt Games is on basically every social media platform at Black Salt Games, and Dredge is going to be on every console, last gen and current gen, and PC, Steam, and GOG on March 30th.
We're very excited for you. It's right around the corner. We can't wait to get our greedy little tentacles on it. Thank you for coming on the show. We do appreciate it. Again, good luck with everything. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Black Salt Games. And as always, please be excellent to each other.